hello there and happy Monday to you. This is your show, Take Two with Jerry and Debbie. I'm Debbie Giorgiani and we have a special guest today. And yes, we are live today on this beautiful Monday on the Feast of St. Clair. Oh, do we love this great saint? She is so important to EWTN. So please learn about the lives of the saints and especially St. Clair today. And we just know this is going to be a wonderful episode of Take Two. We're going to ask you to weigh in on this by chats and email and texting. Phones should be back this week, so we're very excited, and that's wonderful, and we love to hear from our Take Two family, but you're going to have to use these creative ways to get in touch with us, because our guest today is the one, the only, Mr. Adam Bly. He is with us today. He's in the house, the virtual house here, and Adam Bly, welcome back to Take Two.
Oh, thank you, Deb. It's really nice to be here again.
Well, you know, we like to have you on at least a couple times a year because we have brand new listeners to Take Two. And I'm going to ask that the Take Two family, if you want to ask Adam any questions about the work that he does. He does host the Spirit World on Saturdays, 10 a.m. Central, 11 a.m. Eastern, and it's just a wonderful show where we can learn more about angels, demons, and everything in between in the invisible world, so I love that. But Adam, every once in a while, we need to have you back because with our brand new listeners, and a lot of them are not Catholic. So the Take Two family has a lot of non-Catholics that listen and they love what they hear. So I need to ask you these basic questions about the work that you do so we can all be brought up to speed and understand it better. So Adam Bly is our guest today. And here's what I'm going to ask of the Take Two family. If you have any questions for him or for me, you can text us. Here's an easy way to do it. You text the letters EWTN to 58177. You wait for our response. Then you text us your first name and your brief question or comment. And just know that message and data rates may apply. You can also email us take2@EWTN.com, or you can drop it in the chats and Rich will grab it there because Michael's at the controls. Hopefully you can hear us in a crystal clear manner, and then Rich will pick up everything else and we'll put it on the show document, so we'll ask Adam these questions. So Adam, first question that I get asked all the time whenever I speak, whenever I go out there to talk with our wonderful listeners of Catholic Radio, they will say, Adam Bly, a religious demonologist, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, what that means is by formal decree of the church, and a decree is kind of like an authoritative document from your bishop that makes a public statement about something. And a decree could be done for many different things, but sometimes it's done by the church to formally acknowledge somebody's expertise in some area. And when they do that, they usually do that because you're going to be teaching or training priests or doing something official for the church where you need that kind of backup to say the church has said you're competent to go teach on this. So, you know, if somebody were to just say, well, I've read a bunch of books, trust me, you know, let me come teach this stuff, that wouldn't be good enough. There would have to be something from the church that's authoritative that says, we've looked at this individual, we know their history, we see the work that they've done, and we acknowledge that they have this expertise. And when they do that, it's decreeing somebody what's called a paratus, and that's just Latin for expert, so it's nothing special, it's just the Latin word for expert, in some area. And so for me, going back many years now, I was teaching, you know, in seminaries at workshops, you know, teaching for a day at clergy days, at national conferences, kind of all kinds of things for the church here in the United States. And that was the way the church formally said, this person is legitimate, they have real expertise, we've looked at, you know, everything they've done and their background. And so that decree for me names me as a paratus of religious demonology and exorcism. And religious demonology just means somebody has an expertise of dealing with demons and knowing about them from a religious perspective. So there's lots of people that are self-proclaimed demonologists, and usually what they mean is they've read some books and searched online. But a religious demonologist is somebody that understands these things specifically from the Catholic perspective, from the Catholic Christian perspective. You could think of it as a biblical perspective. But there's more to it, of course, with the Catholic Church, with the fathers of the church, etc. And for me, that's really centered around exorcism, because that's really the only place you want to be studying these things is when the church is dealing with them to try to help somebody. Does that help?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I love when you explain the work that you do. I have so many more questions. The questions are already coming in, and they're kind of similar to what I was going to ask you, just to get everybody up to speed. So our guest today is Adam Bly, religious demonologist and the co-host of The Spirit World, heard on Saturdays, 10 a.m. Central, 11 a.m. Eastern. And we had a great show last weekend. Oh, we did the open forum for August. Oh, the amazing feedback we got. It was incredible. And I'm going to ask you some questions on that when we come back from the break. Just a correction here. Please forgive me. Normally it's Rich on social media. This week it's Ace McKay. So you get to drop it in the chats and also send in emails and things of that nature that you can get to Ace McKay, and he will get it right to us. And Michael and I will be able to put it on the document here so we can ask Adam the questions that you want to know the answers to. So please, if you have anything to ask Adam, especially if it has to do with the demons, well, then I would definitely ask Adam, because he is definitely an expert. I can attest to that. And I definitely would say that Adam has just an incredible amount of experience. And I'm going to ask him about that when we come back from the break. But also, texting is just a convenient way to reach us. Please make use of it, and good use of it, because we can get the comments in very quickly, or the questions. So it's super easy, okay? And don't actually write this down. Don't forget this, because this is something you can use every single episode of Take Two, and it's so easy. Text the letters EWTN to 58177. Wait for our response. Then you text us your first name and your brief question or comment. And then just know that message and data rates may apply. It's so fast, you guys, and that's how I can get your information to our guests like Adam Bly very quickly. Okay, you got to stay with us this entire hour during this beautiful Monday. This is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. Stay with us, guys, on Take Two. Our guest today is Adam Bly, religious demonologist and co-host of The Spirit World, heard on Saturdays here on EWTN. And so we're so grateful to Adam that he gives us all the information we need to know about the demon world there. And it's important, guys, because we have to have a confident spiritual life. And in order to do that, we have to know what we are up against, what we are facing, and then primarily what we need to focus on. And Adam's very clear that we have to focus on God at all times. So that's a beautiful thing. And he's wonderful to teach us everything that he can. And I'm going to ask him some of the questions that I have put together, but mainly I'm going to get to the ones that you sent in, and there's about four of them, so I'll get to them in just a moment. I just wanted to share about this ebook, The Pondering Heart of Mary, Reflect and Turn to Our Immaculate Mother, with the free ebook, The Pondering Heart of Mary, filled with beautiful images and quotes. It will encourage you to run to Our Lady and call upon her to guide you in the path of holiness. The free ebook is available right now at ewtn.com/assumption. Okay, so please make sure you pick that up, guys. It's really wonderful ebook. Okay, so Adam, first question that came in from one of our Take Two family members, and I've asked you this many times. So you're a coach to a lot of the exorcists that perform the solemn rite of exorcism. How many exorcisms have you actually coached, and how many have you sat in on?
Well, I mean, I don't keep an exact list, so it's north of 1,000. That I've been at, and I would say, you know, I'm just guessing. It's okay. Somewhere between 1,000 and 2,000 total, and probably three quarters of those I was providing some advice or information.
Now, does it the reason why you're considered an expert and a coach in these in this area? It does it have to do a lot with the fact that you have such an extensive mental health training and background?
I mean, that helps a little bit. It more helps with working with the human being, the person, mm-hmm. kind of after the session or before the session. Because the thing that's not in people's minds usually is the fact that these are real suffering human beings, and it's not just a priest and a demon in a room somewhere. This is a human being that's suffering, and they're aware, at least partly, during these sessions. And they need advice and comfort before, and they need to process things afterwards. And so I think the mental health background helps in that kind of pastoral accompaniment, which mm-hmm. is part of this ministry that the movies never show you. And the other place it helps is with the intake interviews and the people thinking they have a demonic problem, having a strong, you know, exposure to mental health problems of all kinds allows you to kind of notice if it's very pretty obviously a particular diagnosis. You can encourage the person to work with their doctor and try to get that treated, because the demonic stuff is very rare and the mental health stuff and the medical problems is quite common.
So possession is very rare.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So here's the first question that, well, this is the question that I had, and then also one of our Take-Two family members had it as well. So this is great. We're all on the same page. Possession, when you see it in the movies, is somebody that has really opened the door to the occult or problems, and they invited the spirit in, you know, and here they have this major problem with possession. But you, Adam, have spoken about that the spiritual journey of that person, God is maybe permitting or allowing for that person's advanced state, spiritual state. So explain that a little bit better, because I think that Hollywood paints it as this person is really a horrible person who has now become possessed. But you've said other things that are different than that.
Yeah, so people that end up possessed, they're almost never like a malicious Satanist who, I don't know, they miscalculated and they ended up in trouble, and they're really kind of a mean, angry, malicious person. Almost always, these are people that have been conned into playing around with necromancy, talking to the dead, playing with psychics and mediums, mostly playing around with black magic. They've slowly been drawn into that over time. They may have even thought they were doing good. They're not necessarily malicious. They've been tricked. But at some point, the demon says, in some way, it communicates to them, it's a demon, will you accept me? And it's that yes that some people make, in some form, it's not always verbal, but it could be physical, where they clearly understand what they're accepting and they choose it. That's what leads to possession 99% of the time. Now, there are very, very rare saints who went through periods of possession at the extreme end of the spiritual life. So, you know, one that is not that well known in the West is Saint Mary of Jesus Crucified. She was a Carmelite nun. Every Lent, she would go under brief periods of possession where something would take over her body, and her body would physically run to leave the cloister and be disobedient and leave the grounds of the cloister. And this would happen multiple times every Lent. And she had no control over it. The spirit took over her body. Now, that was on a limited way, and it's a person who was, you know, we now know is a saint. Mm-hmm. So it's at the extreme end. Now, some saints dealt with physical struggles with the demonic, like Padre Pio, you know, very famously had physical struggles with them. You know, there's others that have dealt with tremendous temptation. So encounters with the enemy at the extreme end of the spiritual life do happen, but you have to understand this is not the average person in the world. This is not a family person. This is somebody who has been cloistered or living out an assiduous spiritual life for decades and they've advanced very far in the spiritual life. You don't think of this in terms of us out here in the world and, oh, that means maybe I'll be possessed because I go to church every day. We're generally talking about people, you know, towards the end of their lives, at the extreme end of the spiritual journey.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, I love Saint Mary of Jesus Crucified. She's amazing. And I believe her birth name is Mariam Baradi. Isn't that correct? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Amazing. We got, when I went on a Holy Land pilgrimage with Steve Ray, we got to visit, where she was, a nun, and I immediately got close to her, Saint Mary of Jesus Crucified. Amazing. Just an incredible, incredible saint. And, yeah, that's interesting. So let's talk about that. So you're saying on the extreme spectrum, on extreme side of things, where somebody has is moving in that advanced spiritual state, like Padre Pio, Mother Teresa, you know, you just referenced Saint Mary of Jesus Crucified, other saints, there will be brief, you know, periods of encounters with the demonic, whether it's possession or something, just like with Padre Pio, this constant struggle that he would face at night when he was in his cell. So let me ask you this: is God permits that in order for them to even get more connected or deeper in their faith life and in their spiritual growth towards holiness? Is that correct? Am I understanding it correctly? I want to make sure I grasp this accurately so that you're right. So people people don't think, well, I go to daily mass, am I going to start to be possessed?
Right. So again, let's understand what rare means. So in terms of the possession cases that come forward and ask the church for help, in a year, you might see one, two, or three new cases in a large diocese. Okay, that's what I mean by rare in terms of the people that are possessed, that are evaluated and determined to be genuinely possessed and start receiving prayers. So really rare, okay? You're talking like one in a million or less, actually, quite considerably less than one in a million people. Amongst the saints, I would say, again, it's like one in a thousand saints may have gone through this kind of extraordinary demonic stuff. So very rare amongst the saints. It would be done because God only allows things for the spiritual betterment, ultimately, of a person. And before we say, like, well, why would God allow that? You know, that's suffering and, you know, that seems unjust. Remember the cross. God allowed for his very son, his only begotten son, to be tortured and died on a cross. So suffering can be redemptive, and it can be used when it's offered back to God for good. And this can also bring a soul, and we're talking a very, very advanced topic here in terms of like how you would imagine the spiritual director working with a very advanced saint who might be going through this. Just basically, when you get at that very advanced state, things can get a little strange from our perspective because the person is so far connected with the spiritual. Think of, you know, Saint John of the Cross, the Carmelite, and his writings. You know, he wasn't possessed at all, but he described states that were so hard to convey to us that he just resorted to poetry because he said he couldn't formulate it in regular prose. So we need to keep all this in really serious context, that it is extremely rare.
This is fascinating work you do, Adam, and the questions are coming in. Julia is asking this question. Does Adam Bly suffer ill effects from his encounters with the evils that are being cast out? So do you have any ill effects? Now, you know, it's interesting, Julia, let me just comment on this. The movie Nefarious, and I brought this up earlier this morning when we were preparing for this show, Adam. The movie Nefarious, you know, I don't want to be a spoiler of the movie, but first of all, how accurate was that movie? And then also you saw at the end, you know, the evil spirit left the one person and went into another. I mean, can you kind of explain to us how that actually happens and maybe answer Julia's question?
Well, the movie Nefarious, in terms of how the demon talked with him and how it behaved, is pretty accurate for one of the kind of higher level demons in the food chain, you know, that are a little more intelligent and genuinely dangerous, I would say. But they play games and they play different roles all the time. So they wouldn't be as consistently presenting that way. But I would say that's a pretty accurate presentation of how they talk and manipulate and their arrogance and all of that. In the movie, it just kind of jumped into somebody who was there, I believe, watching the execution. And that doesn't work that way unless that person had said yes and invited them in, or was already possessed by other demons, and so hell kind of had a key to that apartment, that body, then yes, it could jump in because the door's already open and the person's already possessed. It's never just one demon in a possession. It's many, many of them. So, you know, that scene would only work if that person was already possessed, basically. They can't just jump into somebody because they want to. They need permission from God to do it. And in order to get permission from God to do something this extraordinary, they need to be able to show this person knew what I was, and they said yes and gave me their body anyway.
So then what about the other part of the question? Julia asks, have you ever suffered any ill effects from your encounters? And then she also put in here, with the evil he casts out. Be clear about that, Adam, that it is the solemn rite of exorcism, and then it's Jesus is in control. Would you also explain that too, to make sure everybody's clear on that?
Yeah, so to be really clear, a solemn exorcism, which is, you know, when you pick up that book, The Exorcism Rite, that can only be done by a priest when the priest has permission from their bishop to do it. So I'm a lay person. I've become an expert in this area. It's very strange, but 20 years ago, there was only somewhere between 9 and 20 exorcists in the whole United States. Very few of them. And so I got involved in this world back then and gained a lot of experience and expertise and had a knack for teaching this stuff. And so I don't cast out demons. The priest exorcist does. Ill effects, I mean, not really, no, because God doesn't allow them to physically harm us much. I might have some scrapes, you know, on my arms or my hands from them attacking us, you know, during the session. I might be a little sore from maybe wrestling around if they, you know, attacked me and took me to the floor, because I'm the person gently restraining the body of the possessed during the session to keep them from getting at the priest. I might be a little banged up, but honestly, no, I just, you know, call it a day and lock up the church and turn the lights out and head home and find something to eat and go on with life. Mm-hmm. There's, and I really don't think about this much outside of the days we do exorcisms, unless I get a call or a text from a priest who needs some advice. And then of course we deal with it. Or if we maybe get a call at the diocese of somebody that thinks they have a problem. But no, there's no nightmares. Nothing happens at my house. I enjoy Mass tremendously. I enjoy prayer tremendously. Life is good. Yeah.
Good. Well, that's good. And you do a wonderful job on the spirit world, I might add. Okay. So Julia, thank you so much. And others are taking advantage of the texting feature, so that's great. Also, you can email us take2@ewtn.com. And also you can put it in the chats and Ace McKay will grab it and get it to us. Okay, Adam, think about this question for a moment. It's coming in from Long Island, New York, and it's a very good question. I think we can all relate to this, but I need you to think about it, and then we'll hit the pause button. We'll come back for the final segment of the spirit. I was going to say the spirit world. Hello, that was Saturday. I meant Take Two with Jerry and Debbie. Okay, you hear the music. I've got all these questions coming in now for Adam Bly. That's great. The question is talking about when we ask God and we have these deep prayers, Adam, should we say them out loud or keep them in our head? Just be thinking about that, Adam. Everyone else, stay tuned. Adam will answer that when we come back and for the final segment of Take Two. We're so glad you're with us on Take Two with Jerry and Debbie. I'm Debbie Giorgiani, and I just want to thank you guys so very much. You're sending in all these wonderful comments that you love the spirit world. Thank you so much. It got me all confused. I was wondering which show I was hosting for a second. You guys are amazing. Thank you. We love the Take-Two family. We love the Spirit World family. And Adam Bly is with us today. We are live on this beautiful Monday, the Feast of St. Clair. And just a wonderful day to be alive and to be talking about things that can help us have a deeper spiritual life and more confident spiritual life. And Adam and I are going to talk more about how we're continuing that with the outreach ministry we do at Stand Tall. So you'll hear that at the end of the show. So stay tuned in for this entire rest of the hour. And Adam, so the question that comes in from Long Island, New York, and it's very interesting. And I think we can all very much relate to this and want to know the best way to get our prayers heard without all the distraction from the demons. And so the question goes, can the demons use prayers against us? Meaning things that we say in prayers that we pray out loud to our Lord during our most quiet meditation. Would it be better for us to pray in our head? Not, does it matter? So keep the prayers in our head, not speak them out loud because the demons may be there, you know, picking up things. And then she continues to say, when I ask for help with certain things in my life or prayer requests that I have, can the demons use those requests against me? So I don't know if it makes sense or it causes some confusion. So can the demons use our prayers against us, and should we keep them in our head?
Okay. So this touches on a really important topic, Deb, and I know where I'll be going with this. As exorcism and the demonic has gotten popular in the last decade or so, and people are talking about it more, and there's lots of podcasts and all of that, there's really a deformation happening in people's spiritual lives. And I'm not picking on this question or this person asking the question. This is a general trend where people are starting to like build their spiritual lives centered around the demonic, thinking about how do I get up and pray against them to stop them from attacking me during the day? How do I, you know, pray to try to get them out of my house, to not interfere with my family? What if this person's mean? They must have the demons influencing them. How do I, you know, intercede to stop that? And the whole spiritual life can start centering around where the devil's kind of, if in your mind's eye, the devil's on the pedestal there and you're doing things in fear to protect yourself and, you know, imagining all these terrible, powerful things he can do. And what we need to have at the center of our mind, on that pedestal in our mind's eye, the center of our spiritual life is Jesus Christ. And remembering that God is God. God created everything. God is aware of your prayers, whether you say them out loud or say them in your head. He's aware of what you're going to ask before you ask it, usually, right? Jesus references the Father knows what you need before you even ask it. And the demons, like, here's the thing. They're like bacteria. So if you think of the analogy of when you were, say, a kid, and somebody tried to explain to you that bacteria and viruses are like on all the doorknobs and on the handles when you go into the store, and they're on the table at home, and, you know, they're just everywhere. And some of them are really bad, and if you get sick from them, some of them can even kill you. So we need to be careful. And then with the pandemic, it was, you had to teach kids, there's these invisible things in the air that, you know, if they get into you, they can kill you or they can make you really, really sick. Learning about demons is kind of like learning about bacteria and viruses. They've always been there. God allows them to tempt us. If we open the door to them and embrace them, he allows them to do more, and that's oppression and possession. If we embrace them and interact with them and form a relationship, if we choose that, he allows more. But for 99% of us, we're just going through life and we're tempted from cradle to grave. God allows it. Why? Because it makes us spiritually stronger by wrestling with temptation, by falling, by getting back up, by repenting. We gain wisdom and we get wiser over time and we make better choices, right? You generally learn from your failures in life often more than you learn from the successes. You certainly can learn from success, but we learn big lessons from when we mess up. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we don't want to like center things around whether the demons can use it against us or not. Who cares? Don't give them that much credit, okay? Mm-hmm. Even if they were there and they heard you praying, it's up to God whether they can even be aware of that or use it. For instance, what I mean by that, when somebody is in a solemn exorcism, demons in a body, it's talking. You know, the priest exorcist can order it to give information. They will say, for instance, well, I'm, you know, you can't cast me out. I don't have to leave because they did this sin this week, and therefore I'm allowed to stay. And then we'll have the person come back, the human come back to their senses and say, okay, so-and-so, is it true you did this bad sin this week? They say, yes, and I haven't, you know, gone to confession. Do you want to do that now? Absolutely. We pause, they go off, Father hears their confession, they come back. Now the demon is not allowed to bring up or lay claim at all related to that sin. It doesn't even describe it or reference it.
After the confession.
So, you know, the mind of these creatures is limited by God. Everything they do is limited by God. Think of the book of Job in the Old Testament. They have to go to God and ask permission to do these extraordinary things, just like they did with Job. And then God puts limits on what they're allowed to do. They're extremely limited creatures. They only seem monstrous and powerful when you enter into relationship with them and give them that much power in your life.
Okay. So let me just grasp it for myself and for those that are listening that are trying to figure out how this plays into our spiritual life. So we focus on Jesus. Okay, Jesus permits, God permits everything and anything he wills to be important for us in our spiritual life, right? And so if he permits certain things to come against us, our job is to stay faithful, stay focused on God, and really trust Jesus more than the difficult things we're facing. So basically keep our eyes on Jesus, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And don't let the demonic start to control how you do things in life. Don't let fear of them start to control you. That's exactly the kind of thing they want, because then they're at the center of your spiritual life. Honestly, don't give them a second thought outside of learning their tricks and avoid their tricks and traps in the world. Stay focused on God. Move towards God. Trust God, as opposed to showing so much deference and fear for the demonic. Deb, one of the final hurdles that a lot of people go through that are possessed and are moving towards the final freedom is trusting Jesus, truly trusting him in the midst of all the suffering they're going through. It seems that he really wants that as part of their spiritual conversion, that they truly trust him as opposed to focusing on the demonic.
Wow, that was powerful. Okay, I hope everyone, the Take Two family, you heard that. That came across very, very powerful. I feel that was an anointed statement that you just made, and that's can really help us today. Before we continue with the questions, we've got Roberts and Kathy's and the others. More of how do we open ourselves up to these encounters with the demons by our choices, the things that we choose to dabble in or to view, and when do the demons know that they have an open door? So we're going to get to those questions in a moment. I want to say a big shout out and congratulations going out to another great EWTN radio partner celebrating 15 years with us. Holy Family Radio has 3 stations serving Ohio. Congratulations to Deacon Jeff Thompson and his great team at Holy Family Radio from your friends here at EWTN. Okay, in the final minutes that we have for this great broadcast, and I hope that everyone, you guys share this particular episode. This is, we're live today on August 11th, okay? So it's very current, up to date. Send it to your friends, because there's a lot of things circulating in Hollywood right now, and it's becoming a big thing of grabbing people together and telling them all the gruesome details and gory details of the demonic world, and and they do it in the Hollywood style. And because of that, it's instilling a lot of fear, a lot of angst and things that are that's not good for our spiritual life. So that's why we want to clear things up today. So Adam, couple questions have come in. And basically you answered a lot of them, like Kathy's and the others that were talking about this idea of, you know, how they put doubts, how the demons get us to start to doubt ourselves and our own spiritual, maturity, and how they you know can put thoughts in our heads, thinking that we're not going to make it. You know, you're not going to make it. You're not good enough. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, sure. Their only goal, really, like at the end of the day, their only goal is to separate us from God. That's their be all and end all, because they cannot strike at God. They can't do anything to God. It would be like, you know, a goldfish in your house thinking it can, like, do you some harm. Like, it just
like a
literally
shark.
Cannot
happen.
Yeah,
it can't be a shark, yeah.
Right, it's like a little tiny guppy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, take that analogy 1,000 times more. So they can't do anything to God. So all they can do is strike at the creature created in the image of God. And they can try to seduce away as many of those souls as possible. Now, human beings are created in the image of God. That's a soul and a body together. That's the definition of a human being, theologically. They don't have bodies. They're just spirits. They're fallen angels, and they want us damned. It's not a win for them to kill us, nor I don't think God would allow it. For them to physically kill us, it's not a win. They want us damned, which is their ultimate goal. Now, to make us despair of God's love and approval and mercy and the redemption of Christ, all of it. Yes, they're big on that. You know, they want to convince people that God's given up on them, that they're not worthy. All those things are the kind of things they say to possess people as they're working on them all week in between sessions. They're yammering away basically all the time. It's an awful existence. The people that are possessed, like you think of them in the movies as this person that comes in and then it's all about the demon and the priest. There's a suffering human there. And the hours and days in between sessions are very, very difficult. And it's, I think, it would be a good charitable thing to pray for those that are suffering possession for their strength in between sessions. Because we get a lot of requests for prayer to help these people struggle through. So do they want us to despair of God's love? Absolutely.
Okay, that's their ultimate goal. So we've got to resist that. We've got to stay focused on Jesus. We get the picture and we get the message, Adam, loud and clear. So that's a fantastic. Thank you for sharing with us and reminding us. Okay, we got a lot of questions and comments coming in on the social media chats. One of our YouTube chat members is asking about they're suffering from night terrors. Would Adam have any advice? Adam, please share that method that you have shared with priests and with all of the faithful on the spirit world that listen to the spirit world. I think it is just golden what you shared. I've used it many times and it is just amazing with the sacramentals. So of holy water. So Adam, please, night terrors, what should people do?
Okay, so first off, night terrors specifically, they are a real brain problem. There can be purely medical night terrors. They generally happen in children. Very rare that it continues into adulthood, though it can. And it is kind of like the outer part of the brain where the consciousness is basically shut off during these. And so the person's not able to really articulate speech. They're generally screaming, you know, just kind of raw terror. And then the child doesn't remember it the next morning when they wake up. They have no idea it happened. Because, again, the higher functions of the brain are not operating, so memory's probably not being encoded properly. Now, that happens. That is a sleep disorder. It is, you know, a medical thing with the developing brain for some people. What a lot of people experience and they call night terrors is sleep paralysis, where they wake up and basically from their nose downward, so they can open their eyes, but they can't speak, they can't move their hands, can't move their legs, they're paralyzed. And they generally have a sense of a presence and a lot of fear. And it is scary to wake up paralyzed, of course, but they're also half dreaming. And so when people say night terrors, they usually mean that because it can include seeing a figure standing in the room or something scary like that. Generally, the paralysis lasts 10 or 20 seconds and then shuts off. By the way, Deb, that's just a malfunction of the system in the brain that naturally shuts off the motor system while we sleep so that when we're dreaming of running, our legs aren't moving, thrashing around in the bed, right? Because the body and brain can't tell the difference between dreaming and awake. And so the motor system is shut off when we sleep. That's why people twitch as they're going to sleep. Anybody that's watched somebody go to sleep, you'll see little twitches in the body. That's basically the motor system being shut off. So basically what I'm saying is, usually this is just a sleep disorder, not spiritual at all. Now, it can be spiritual, and one way to quickly, and this is not 100%, but you can be pretty sure. Take some holy water from your Catholic church, get a bottle of it. There'll be a big container there somewhere. Fill up a bottle, take it home. Right before you lay down to go to sleep, put some in your palm, rub your hands together so your hands are damp with the holy water. It doesn't have to be a ton of it. Close your eyes, pat your whole head down, the top of your head, pat the sides, pat your ears, pat your closed eyes, your face, back of your neck, and then, you know, your head's a tiny bit damp. It'll go away in a few seconds. And then lay down and go to sleep. And if this is demons tormenting through demonic nightmares, that will stop on a dime for that night. Now, again, it's not 100% proof because the brain's, you know, it could be a placebo effect where you kind of think you should stop dreaming, and so you do for that night.
Right.
But if you consistently do this each day and it 100% is gone, there's a decent chance it was spiritual.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good advice. We just have a couple more minutes, left of the show, but I have to tell you, you guys are sending in a ton of messages. So just keep in mind that you do have the spirit world that you can always call in on Saturdays, 10 a.m. Central, 11 a.m. Eastern. Okay. Another great podcast on EWTN's Podcast Central is Just a Guy in the Pew. We're talking Catholic man, to Catholic man. No fancy jargon, just real honest conversations from the heart as John and Victor discuss the struggles, challenges, and unimaginable joy of following Christ. You can hear this and other faith-filled podcasts at EWTN Podcast Central. Visit EWTN.com/podcast today. I'm going fast because the comments are coming in pretty fast, Adam. So two quick things, and then I want to get to Unfiltered that we're featuring starting September 1st on Stand Tall. You can find us at standtalltoday.com, and we're launching Unfiltered. It starts in September. It's a series of webinars of things we cannot talk about on the radio, but we want to go in depth because you guys have asked for it, those on Take Two and also for the spirit world. So we're starting Unfiltered starting September 1st at standtalltoday.com. Check it out. See if it interests you. If it's something you want to journey with us for the next year, please go there and take a look at what it offers. Okay, two quick things, Adam, I want to finish with. Robert says, does addiction have an unclean spirit associated with it? Does addiction have that attachment to an unclean spirit?
Sometimes. It's not all the time. I have seen people spontaneously freed from alcoholism amidst the prayers. We're not even praying specifically against that, but just during deliverance prayers, they were just instantly freed of it. They've had zero interest. If they smell alcohol, they get sick. They've had zero interest in it, and it's been years. They've been completely sober. I've seen people completely delivered of smoking in the same way, where after one just a particular prayer session, suddenly they have zero interest in smoking. If they smell it, they get nauseous, and they've been free of it. Now, I'm not saying that it's guaranteed that if somebody prays for you, you'll be freed of these things. This is up to God. But those tell me that at least sometimes there is a spirit behind it. Now, God can heal, right? So it could be a regular addiction, and God just healed it. It's not necessarily a demon. So what I'm getting at, Deb, is mm-hmm. in life, all the problems of life, they have a spiritual layer to them because we are spiritual creatures. We're a soul and a body, and God is real. There is a spiritual world. So sure, there's going to be a spiritual layer to things, but that doesn't mean that every addicted person has a demon attached to them.
Okay, got it. Okay, so Adam, I got to go quickly because we're going to run out of time. So what are the types of things that people dabble in or they view as entertainment that can open? You always say it's like they're giving the demons the keys to the apartment, and they just don't come in with one demon. It's a whole group of them. So what are some of the things that people do that open themselves up to this demonic activity?
All right. So the most intense and worst things are witchcraft and Satanism, meaning real black magic, where you're asking demons to do you favors, where you're actually casting spells and consorting with demons. It's not atheistic Satanism where you just like the symbol of Satan as a rebel, etc. Doing black magic, number one, biggest problem, get you in trouble real fast. Playing around with psychics, mediums, ghost hunting, Reiki, yoga, that will start you down this kind of rabbit hole. It won't lead to huge problems right away. You'll be strung along for a while, but eventually you'll usually end up oppressed at some point. And then, you know, lesser things like very serious sin, going deeper and deeper into mortal sin that gets very kind of intense, and you're not doing anything to get out of it. That very much weakens our spiritual life mm-hmm. also.
Could pornography be that, what you're talking about, serious sin?
Oh, absolutely. And I've worked in the prisons and psychological services with sex offenders, and a lot of people, they start a spiral of using pornography, and they need more and more intense pornography over time, and eventually it crosses a line into illegal stuff. They all say they knew it was illegal. They knew they would be caught. In fact, they secretly wanted to be caught, but they felt helpless to stop. Mm-hmm. So I do think there's a spiritual layer to that.
Okay. So we only have a couple minutes left. Adam, I know you need longer than this, but you're going to have to do it real quickly. So if people feel like they're getting some kind of demonic attack or they're coming up against the demons, what's the best thing they can do to just, remove it or keep it at bay or just find some peace while they're dealing with it?
Well, if you're Catholic, make sure you're in a state of grace. That's number one. Go to confession. Make sure you don't have any unconfessed mortal sin on you. Get in that state of grace, that state of friendship with God, that state of being an adopted child of God. Go to Mass. Do the regular sacramental life. That clears up the vast majority of things. Confession ends cases before they even start all the time. If you're not Catholic, if you're Christian, repent sincerely. Try to root the sin out of your life. Genuinely try to stop these doorways. And if there's extraordinary stuff, you really need to go to your local priest, your local minister, or your local diocese.
Mm-hmm. And you said that the rosary is one of the best deliverance prayers. True?
Absolutely. Up to and including case where we were dealing with Satan himself, and it was the Hail Mary at the end of the case that's what ended the case. So I have tremendous faith in the rosary. I've used it as an intercessory prayer for possessed people that are being attacked between sessions. It's never failed.
Mm-hmm. And as the laity, don't come directly against the demons and foster that confrontation. Ask Jesus for his assistance, correct?
Yeah, so the thing you want to avoid is giving direct commands to demons unless you have that full apostolic authority, meaning a priest with the bishop's permission behind them. You don't want to boss them around is the bottom line, because we don't have authority to boss them around until we have that apostolic authority behind us. Mm-hmm. And that's given to priests in these special contexts. So ask Jesus to do it. That keeps Christ at the center of the prayer anyway, as opposed to us imagining that we're powerful. Yes, we have a baptismal priesthood if you're baptized, but that's not the same thing. So Jesus is ultimately the exorcist. He's ultimately the one that does all of this. So just put him at the center of the prayer from the beginning.
I love it. Okay. Adam, thank you so much. You spent your lunch hour with us. You're working at the Diocese of Pittsburgh, and I know you're walking the seminary grounds right there as you're talking with us. So thank you. Thank you for remembering the Take Two family and prayers. And thank you for spending your lunch hour again, answering questions for us and clearing things up so we can have the best, most confident spiritual life. So I'll catch you on the Spirit World. Adam, have a beautiful rest of your day. For the rest of the Take Two family, please consider going to standtalltoday.com. Check out Unfiltered. Adam and I are going to go deeper in areas of angels and demons and everything in between that we can't really talk about on the radio. So hopefully that'll appeal to you. You asked for it, so we definitely want to do that for the all the listeners of Take Two and the Spirit World. Thank you to Michael and Ace, our show team today in place. Thank you so much for everybody going on texting and the chats and emailing us. We absolutely love the Take Two family, and we love the affiliates that carry Take Two Live. And so that'll do it. Until tomorrow, have a beautiful and blessed day. See you real soon.